I'm Phil. I'm here with my co-host and producer, Tammy. And together, we're the co-host of the Homicide Canada podcast. So today, we're doing the January 2022 episode, where we're going to go through the homicides that occurred in Canada in January of 2022. And just in case you are just tuning into your first episode and don't know who we are, we have this podcast, and we also have a website called homicidecanada.com, where we try to track all the homicides that occur in Canada throughout the year. Besides the website, we're also on Facebook and Instagram. I think if you just Google Homicide Canada, we'll show up. We're on Twitter as homicide_Canada. And so I guess we'll start with the year-to-date homicides that we have in Canada so far. As of today, which I think we're recording this February 22nd, so there's been 105 homicides so far in 2022. For those of the gender that we know, 69 are male, 32 are female. So I guess there's a few we don't know which of the gender is. And that projects out, if you took that same number and just evenly did it throughout the year, that would come out to a total of 723. And that's higher than the 690 that we've recorded so far for 2021. So it seems like, that homicides are, at the beginning of the year, trending higher than last year. And that comes out also to a projected homicide rate per 100,000 of 1.89 for Canada. In terms of trends, so far provincially, Manitoba has a lead with the highest provincial homicide rate and slightly ahead of Saskatchewan. Of the cities that we kind of track specifically, like the bigger ones, Winnipeg has the highest homicide rate. Also, I guess I'll mention here during the intro parts. If you see that on our pages and that, or see on our site and that we're missing a murder, you can always go and email us at info@homicidecanada.com. And if you go to our website, obviously, we try to have a page for every single homicide. And besides that, also, if you look up at the top, there's kind of like the tab for different sections in that. We have like a provincial section where you can click through and look at all the provincial victims or victims per province. And same with the bigger municipalities in that. So, if you're from like somewhere bigger than that or your province, you can go check out and see what the progress is in terms of how many homicides there's been so far this year in 2022 on our website, and we encourage you to visit. All right, I'm going to throw off to Tammy here.
Okay, so in January 2022, there were 69 homicide victims compared to 52 in January 2021. That's a 32% increase. There were 18 females, 48 males, and 3 gender unknown.
Okay, that's like a big increase from last year. I don't know if that's like shutdown related or not. I don't know. I guess we were shut down in 2021 as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Just could be randomness month to month. All right. I'm going to mention the youngest and oldest victims that we had, homicide victims of the month. So the youngest was a 6-month-year-old in Saguenay in Quebec. We're going to talk about that a bit later, part of a double murder-suicide. And the oldest was a homicide investigation that was underway following a fatal fire in Georgina that took the life of 85-year-old Sandy Gauthier. Is Georgina in Ontario or
different province? Georgina, yeah.
Okay. Paramedic services and the Georgina Fire and Emergency Services were called to a residence on Miami Drive for a report of a house fire on January 15th, shortly after 5 a.m. After the blaze was extinguished, firefighters located the homeowner, Sandy Gauthier, 85, deceased. An autopsy was performed and revealed the manner of death to be a homicide. The cause of death has not been released, and there's been no arrests have been made at this time. So no cause of death, but there's a fire. So, I don't know, probably like most, like oftentimes that we've seen, obviously, like running this podcast and website, there's like when cases like this, like the person was killed somehow, a different method, and then somebody lit the house on fire. Like, obviously, we don't have evidence of that, but statistically, that's often what you'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go over like how many homicides there were for the provinces individually. Ontario had 26, BC had 12, Alberta had 11, Manitoba had 7, Saskatchewan had 6, Quebec only had 4, New Brunswick and Nova Scotia had a single homicide. That means all the territories, as well as Newfoundland and PEI, had no homicides in January of 2022.
The municipalities with more than one homicide, Toronto had 10. That's pretty high for even Toronto. One of them was a double homicide. Winnipeg had 4. Richmond had 3, but that was a triple murder homicide. Airdrie had 2, and they were unrelated, which is also kind of strange. Like, I've never heard of Airdrie before.
Yeah, I guess it's I don't think I've ever been to it, but I guess it's like a, it's a kind of a rapidly growing suburb or exurb of Calgary, so.
Calgary had 2. Edmonton had 2. Oshawa had 2. Ottawa had 2. Saguenay had 2, and that was a double murder-suicide, and Saskatoon had 2, and that was a double homicide.
Oh, yeah. And I guess Vancouver didn't have any.
No, they just had their first 2.
Okay.
And murders by type, there were 11 shootings, 10 stabbings, 6 beatings, 4 others, 3 of them were fire-related, and 23 unknown or unreleased.
Okay. All right then. Okay. So now we're going to come to the section of the podcast when we do the monthly ones, where we go through like some of the more noteworthy, homicides that occurred during the month. The first one is, 4 people were found dead in Richmond, BC, kind of a suburb of Vancouver. Richmond RCMP responded to the 4500 block of Garden City Road in response to a complaint during the evening of January 25th. On arrival, police located 4 deceased people inside the residence who were later confirmed to be victims of a shooting. The Integrated Homicide Investigation Team said initial information gathered indicates this is a targeted shooting, but not connected to the ongoing Lower Mainland gang conflict. The identity of the victims has now been confirmed, but is being withheld pending next of kin notification. Police said they were from the same household and have no associations to gangs or criminal activities. Homicide investigators have determined that all persons involved in and responsible for the homicide have been accounted for. IHIT is not looking for any additional suspects. Police confirm that the victims are from a single family and consist of a father and mother, age 58, and 2 adult children, ages 23 and 21. Police believe the 23-year-old son was the shooter. IHIT said in press release, while it is still early in the investigation, this does not appear to be an incident of partner violence. Homicide investigators have confirmed that one of the victims in the household had a firearms license and had access to a firearm. Sergeant David Lee of IHIT said the community is safe, but we have confirmed this is an isolated incident and there are no suspects at large. So looks like a sad case of family homicide there.
Yeah, I wonder who had the gun license.
That's true. Was it the son or was it maybe one of the parents?
So. Yeah. Toronto homicide number 8, a 13-year-old boy has been charged in the fatal shooting of a 15-year-old boy. Toronto police responded to a shooting in the Gamble Avenue and Pape Avenue area on January 19th at approximately 11:20 p.m. Police arrived to find a boy with life-threatening injuries in the underground of an apartment. Officers immediately commenced life-saving measures, however, the 15-year-old victim was pronounced at the scene. Police seized 2 firearms and ammunition, and on January 20th, police arrested a 13-year-old boy and charged him with second-degree murder. The victim's identity was released, however, it's been removed as per Section 111 of the Youth Criminal Justice Act. The family of the victim officially withdrew their consent for the publication of the 15-year-old boy's identity.
Yeah, that's a pretty depressing one, like a 15-year-old killed by an even younger.
Yeah, like 13 years old. That's like crazy. And honestly, when I was 13 years old, I wasn't allowed outside at 11:20.
Yeah, that's pretty late too. So,
yeah,
I don't know. And also having access to like a firearm and that, like
crazy.
I don't know. I guess it seems like there's just a flood of like illegal handguns in that in Toronto. And that because, I don't know, it's like when a 13-year-old has one, like, I don't know.
Yeah, and a lot of kids lately, a lot of teens.
Definitely. So the next one is a double murder-suicide after a father and 2 children were found dead in Saguenay. Quebec. Saguenay firefighters and local police were called to an explosion at a home on Dubose Street in Saguenay's Arvida district on January 10th at approximately 10 a.m. On arrival, police located a deceased 39-year-old Derek Lalancette and his son, who was 2 years old. His second child was under a year old and was located deceased later that afternoon. According to JournalDeQuebec.com, the children have been identified as Felix, 2, and Edouard, 6 months old. Their mother had left the children with their father a few hours before the explosion so that he could spend time with them. Police said the explosion happened in the basement apartment of the home. Hugh Bellelot, spokesman for the Sûreté de Québec, said they have ruled out breakage of a domestic appliance due to the magnitude of the blast, so I guess not a gas explosion. He said Lancet, who worked at the Niobic mine in Saint-Honoré, had knowledge of explosives. So, yeah, that's a pretty sad case there.
Yeah, that's crazy. Integrated Homicide Investigation Team investigates the fatal stabbing of Ramina
Shaw
in Coquitlam. Coquitlam RCMP responded to a report of a female victim located in underground parkade at the 1100 block of Austin Avenue suffering from stab wounds on January 27th at approximately 4:30 p.m. Police located 32-year-old Ramina Shaw, also known as Ramina...
Or maybe it's Karamzede? I don't know.
Karamzede Shirazi, suffering from serious injuries. She was in the underground parkade in an alley behind a strip mall. She was rushed to hospital where she was pronounced deceased a short time later. Shaw, a new realtor, was described by her colleagues as an outgoing personality. Police are still searching for motive, and IHIT says early evidence suggests it's not connected to gangs or criminal activity. According to Global News, court documents first revealed by the Vancouver Sun show BC government once tried to seize the home of Shaw, owned with her ex-husband Bobby, and also three vehicles. The province's allegations include that Bobby used various false identities to get people to cash fake checks on his behalf. These allegations have not been proven. In March 2018, RCMP searched the couple's Maple Ridge home in Port Coquitlam business. It was called Hollywood Vape Labs. Officers seized multiple cell phones, gold, silver, and diamond jewelry, and four vehicles, including a Pontiac alleged to contain kilos of fentanyl and suspected cocaine inside. The province's director of civil forfeiture alleged that the house recently assessed at $2.8 million and the motorcycle, Land Rover, and Porsche were obtained through proceeds of crime and used for illegal activity, including fraud and drug trafficking. The lawsuit was dismissed in April 2021 with the consent of all parties involved. That was after it was determined that police infringed not only on the couple's privacy, but their rights and freedoms. Homicide investigators are looking to speak with anyone that was in the area and has dash cam footage from 2:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. on January 27th in the area of the 1100 block of Austin Avenue. Anyone with information or video footage is asked to contact the Integrated Homicide Investigation Team information line at 1-877-551-4448.
So yeah, like that's it's kind of interesting that in a sense that I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh here, but I'm just thinking of Canada's housing issues right now, and that obviously this woman, admittedly, it doesn't seem like anything was proved by the government in that, but obviously there's some interesting things going on there, and yeah, now she became like a real estate agent in that. So yeah, so. Anyways, I guess we'll probably learn more. But well, I don't know. I guess there's no suspects yet. Anyways, we'll keep track of that one, and maybe something will come out. Okay, the next one. This is another Toronto sad case of kids getting involved. So this was Toronto homicide number 9. Malachi Elijah Bainbridge was fatally shot outside a fast food restaurant. Toronto police responded to a call for a shooting at 2 Ingram Drive on January 22nd, approximately 12:40 a.m. Police arrived at the parking lot outside a fast food restaurant where they found a man in a car suffering injuries from gunshots. The victim, 19-year-old Malachi Elijah Bainbridge, was pronounced dead at the scene. Two men were seen fleeing the area in a dark sedan. Anything or anyone with information was asked to contact police at 416-808-7400. Then there was an update on February 8th from the Toronto Police Homicide Squad. They executed search warrants and arrested three youths on February 7th in relation to the homicide of Malachi Bainbridge. A 16-year-old boy from Oshawa was charged with first-degree murder. A 16-year-old boy from Oshawa was charged with accessory after the fact murder, four counts of unauthorized possession of a firearm, four counts of possession of a loaded firearm, four counts of careless storage of a firearm, four counts of unauthorized possession of a firearm in a motor vehicle, possession of a Schedule 1 substance for the purpose of trafficking, and then a 15-year-old girl from Oshawa was charged with accessory after the fact to murder, possession of unauthorized firearm, possession of a loaded firearm, careless storage of a firearm, possession of Schedule 1 substance for the purpose of trafficking. There's another update on February 10th that Toronto Police announced they've recovered several firearms that are being analyzed. If you go to the website, we have a photo from the police of all the weapons, and it's quite a wide selection of not just handguns, but also, I'm not sure if it's a rifle. It looks like a scope maybe, plus some high capacity magazines. On February 8th, the OPP conducted a vehicle stop in the Trenton area. The driver identifies himself as Tyler James Willian, 19 of Oshawa, who was wanted in relation to a homicide in Toronto. And he was arrested and charged with accessory after the fact to murder. And then on Wednesday, February 9th, members of the homicide squad located and arrested a 14-year-old boy from Oshawa. He was charged with accessory after the fact to murder. Okay, so that's like another like two cases in 1 month in Toronto, I guess, of minors and that.
Yeah, like, and it's not, I don't know, like these are young kids. Yeah. It's crazy.
Though admittedly, apparently these ones are from Oshawa, so.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, I can't imagine it's, well, maybe it is easy to buy a gun when you're underage, but, well, obviously it is because they have them, but like these look like guns you see in the movies. It's not like,
yeah, these look like some like not like a cheap Saturday Night Special or something like that. These look like some like
it looks like an army rifle, like with a scope on it. It's crazy.
So like these kids were, I guess, came prepared in that. So
crazy.
I don't know. I guess we'll keep following that trend for the rest of the year in that. So
yeah. Okay, so update, Scott Pinney has been found dead. Dufferin OPP responded to a home on Main Street in Shelburne to check on the well-being of a person on January 8th. On arrival, police located 65-year-old Deborah Neal, deceased inside the home. An autopsy was performed on January 17th and revealed the manner of death to be a homicide. The cause of death has not been released still, and I'm not sure that it will be released. Police had issued a arrest warrant for Scott Pinney, 44, of Orangeville. He was wanted for second-degree murder, and police were looking for him in a white 2019 Honda Civic with Ontario license plates. So there was an update, and Scott Pinney was found dead inside his abandoned vehicle in a secluded area near Hearst, Ontario, on January 17th. Police said his death has not been deemed suspicious or suicide.
That's kind of, I don't know really what that means in that. Like, I guess the only thing I could see is that, like, he was driving his car and crashed it and died and that.
Yeah, but in a secluded area? Yeah. And I was like, COVID?
Yeah.
Was he sick? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, there's, I don't know. You figure that, like, in a lot of, like, historically and statistically, usually when this happens, it's usually someone's killed someone and then they've committed suicide later in that, but
I guess, I don't know. I guess a secluded area could mean like he hit a tree or something.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. So, the next, one is Roy Douglas Snyder was charged with first degree murder in relation to a fatal stabbing at the Integrated Care Hub in Kingston. Kingston police responded to a report of a stabbing at the Integrated Care Hub. It's a drop-in center where individuals can access food, harm reduction supplies, support, and community. At approximately 2 a.m. on January 10th, a 51-year-old man was located suffering from stabbing injuries by Frontenac paramedics. They treated the victim and rushed him to hospital where he died of his injuries. The victim has been identified as David Jaeger Hodgson. According to reports, the suspect fled the scene, hid in a wooden area behind the care hub, where he was located at approximately 12:20 p.m. Roy Douglas Snyder, 48, of Kingston, was charged with first-degree murder and possession of a weapon and committing an offense.
Yeah, that's sad. I wonder, like, sometimes it's just out of desperation, right? Like, you never know what happened there. A man has been charged in relation to the homicide of his mother in Newmarket. York Region Police responded to a report of a family domestic dispute occurring at a residence near the area of Gorham Street and Leslie Avenue in Newmarket on January 5th at approximately 5 p.m. Police arrived to find a 61-year-old woman with life-threatening injuries. She was rushed to hospital where she died of her injuries. Police will not be releasing or confirming the name of the victim, the accused, or the address of the incident in order to protect the identities of the additional family members who were witnesses. The victim's 25-year-old son was taken into custody and charged with second-degree murder, arson causing damage to property, and anyone with information is asked to contact the homicide unit at 1-866-876-5423, extension 7865.
You know, that's kind of interesting, the fact that they're not seeming to give very much information because, like, the son's in custody now. So.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just because, like, the other people who live there are witnesses, and if it's already in the courts, they can't...
I suppose that's possible.
Yeah, or maybe they just don't want, like, media going to their house.
Yeah, maybe. That's kind of unusual, so...
Yeah.
But part of a growing trend, it seems, that police like releasing less and less homicide information.
Yeah.
Okay. The next homicide we're going to talk about is a 20-year-old man was charged with the murder of Kira Upencha, I hope I pronounced that correctly, and Phoenix Chikosis in Saskatoon. Saskatoon police responded to a report of an injured person at a residence in the 400 block of Avenue B, north on January 19th at 1:40 p.m. On arrival, police located a 20-year-old Phoenix Chikosis and a 19-year-old Kira Upencha suffering from stab wounds. I guess, are they both female then, Tammy? Or
No, okay. Phoenix is a male.
Male, okay. All right, so wasn't sure. They were both rushed to hospital where Kira died of her injuries. A 20-year-old Saskatoon man was arrested near the scene, and he had originally been charged with second-degree murder and attempted murder. And then there was an update that Phoenix, 21, or Chikosis, died in hospital on January 20th, the next day, I guess. And the charges were upgraded to 2 counts of second-degree murder. Police noted that the victims and accused were known to each other. So, and we don't have an identity on the 20-year-old alleged perpetrator then?
No, I feel like that's another growing trend that they're not announcing who the suspect or the accused is.
Okay.
Timothy Andrew McDougall charged with the murder of missing woman Sherry Lynn Flett in Fort McMurray. Alberta RCMP said they located human remains on January 24th, 2022, at a residence in the Grayling Terrace neighborhood in Fort McMurray, Alberta. An autopsy was performed at the Edmonton Office of the Chief Medical Examiner, and the human remains have been identified as belonging to missing person Sherry Lynn Flett, 43, of Fort McMurray. Sherry Lynn Flett was last seen on January 12, 2022, in the downtown area of Fort McMurray. She was reported missing on January 16th. As a result of the investigation, the Alberta RCMP Major Crimes, along with assistance from Alberta RCMP Emergency Response Team, the Wood Buffalo RCMP, and the Wood Buffalo RCMP General Investigation Section, they arrested Timothy Andrew McDougall, 37, of Fort McMurray, and charged him with second-degree murder, indignity to human remains, unlawful confinement, additional firearm-related offenses. RCMP has not released if the victim and the accused were known to each other, and said, as this matter is now before the courts, no further information can be provided.
Okay, the next one, it's been a busy month. Windsor, Ontario police charged two women with first-degree murder and in relation to the death of a Windsor senior, I guess, first-degree murder and aided suicide. Okay, let me go over this. Windsor Major Crime Investigators launched an investigation in January of 2022 after receiving that the information of the death of a 79-year-old female was a result of an assisted suicide. Police identified two adult males as being involved in the incident. Both suspects had a familial relationship with the victim. On February 17th, 2022, both suspects were located by members of the Major Crime Unit and were arrested without an incident. A 49-year-old female from Windsor is charged with first-degree murder, aided suicide. And then a 23-year-old female victim was also charged with first-degree murder and aided suicide. The names of the charged persons and victims are not being released to protect the integrity of the investigation. I don't know. It's a strange one. Like, obviously, I know there's, like, assisted suicide is allowed now, but you have to go through the proper channels and that, so.
Yeah, that seems pretty, like, maybe she didn't want to die. I don't know.
Like, it's... I guess we don't know exactly what the circumstances are as yet in that.
Yeah, because so. First-degree murder, that's like...
That's a pretty hardcore charge in that. So, I don't know. That's like, this obviously doesn't seem to come up very often, but...
No.
I don't know. I guess so, yeah. We'll kind of keep track of it and see if some more information comes out about what the more, like, the nature of the incident and that. Because, I don't know. I guess it makes you wonder, too, in terms of, like, you know, you can obviously kind of go through... the proper channels and that, but, you know, like, I don't know, like nowadays and that, like somebody like the, like, I don't know, in terms of like somebody, but yeah, like who's dying soon and they're on morphine and that, then, you know, sometimes they're just like, sort of like, well, they can keep pressing it as much as they want and then whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seems odd that these like a charge might like this might still be happening, but yeah, we don't know exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
There, so.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing is that maybe it seemed that that they received information, so maybe it was the fact that somebody complained that about this, so.
Yeah, because I just added that one into the notes like a day or two ago because it hadn't come out yet.
Yeah.
It was just all of a sudden like, oh, this happened and this is kind of crazy. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's like, yeah, we've been doing this for a while, like a number of years now, and I don't remember that actually, like.
No.
Like assisted suicide, somebody getting charged with first degree murder, but.
No.
Okay. So yeah, that covered like the more sort of noteworthy homicides that happened in January. So now we're going to go into the noteworthy sort of the arrests and discoveries that happened during the month. So we got an update on arrest made and charges laid. Toronto homicide number one. Ario Facomi was identified as the victim of a fatal shooting in North York. Toronto police responded to a report of a shooting in the Weston Road and Highway 401 area on January 2nd at approximately 5:51 p.m. Police and paramedics arrived to find Ario Facomi, 37, of Toronto, suffering from gunshot wounds. He was rushed to hospital where he died of his injuries. No arrests have been made or at that point, and police were asking anyone who was driving on Weston Road between 401 and Jane Street on Sunday, January 2nd, 2022, from 5:15 p.m. to 6:15 p.m. with a dash cam to contact the homicide unit at 416-808-7400. And there was an update on January 7th. A Canada-wide warrant was issued for Sean Powers, 35, of Toronto. He was wanted for second-degree murder. And then on Sunday, February 13th of this month, at approximately 1:30 a.m., Toronto police arrested and charged Sean Powers of Toronto with second-degree murder. And he appeared at Old City Hall Court on Sunday, February 13th, 2022, via video link.
Okay. There's been an update on the 2021 stabbing death of Clinton Johnson in Port Alberni.
That's in British Columbia, or?
I think, yes.
Okay.
So, background. Police responded to the report of an injured man laying on the sidewalk at the 3500 block of 4th Avenue near the Port Alberni Friendship Center on March 27th. Clifton Johnson was located suffering from stab wounds to the chest, and he was pronounced deceased at the scene. So on January 25th, 2022, RCMP announced that they arrested a 16-year-old male on January 19th and charged him with second-degree murder in relation to the homicide. RCMP said investigators had been working on this investigation continuously for nearly 10 months, awaiting forensic laboratory results and completing the significant disclosure of these investigations required for charge approval. So another minor.
Another minor perpetrator of that. So yeah, it seems to be becoming, like, I don't know, like, I guess we have statistics going back a number of years in that. We have, like, obviously more on the victims' ages than the perpetrators in that. But yeah, it seems, I don't know, like, if to me it seems there's a real trend of a lot more minor murderers, basically.
Yeah.
All right. So another case, like, we don't generally cover Canadians killed outside of Canada. I don't know. We're covering Canada already, so that's enough for us for now. But certainly we keep track of some of the more noteworthy homicides of Canadians that occur outside the province. So this was a sad one. Ashley Wadsworth of Vernon, B.C. was killed by a boyfriend in Chelmsford, UK. According to reports, Ashley Wadsworth, 19, was discovered unresponsive in a home on Tennyson Road in Chelmsford, Essex, on February 1st at approximately 4 p.m. Wadsworth, who was from Vernon, British Columbia, moved to Chelmsford on a six-month tourist visa in November. Jack Seppel, 23, of Chelmsford, was Ashley's boyfriend, and he was charged with the murder of Ashley. According to the Vancouver Sun, multiple media outlets reported that in court, police claimed they found the defendant in bed on his phone and Wadsworth bleeding under the covers next to him. Her cause of death was a stab wound. Ashley had reached out to her friends in her church community. I believe she was a Mormon.
I heard she was a Mormon.
Latter-day Saints. Asking for help with how Jack was controlling in the weeks leading up to her death. She had met him online through mutual friends and had spoken to him multiple times over the 5 years she had known him. Wadsworth was Métis and well-known to our people within the Vernon community, said Daniel Fontaine, CEO of Métis Nation British Columbia. Seppel was not granted bail, and his next court appearance was set for March 7th for preliminary trial and preparation hearing. So, yeah, that's like a pretty sad case there of, like, victim moving to the UK to sort of, like, I guess, be with her boyfriend and that. And
yeah, it's kind of scary and also strange. Like, I looked into this Jack Seppel and I couldn't find any, like, information on anything.
So it's kind of like a ghost eye on Instagram and
He didn't seem to have any that I could find, like, any priors of any violence.
Okay.
But there was a picture of him with her.
Yeah.
And he had a black eye, so who knows, right?
Yeah.
Who knows?
So, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sad and, to go all that way and then to have that happen. And then also the fact him in bed on the bed beside her looking at his phone after, like, as she was dying, basically, like,
yeah, that sounds like a mental health thing. There, that's really strange. Tyler Anthony Lazmadey has been sentenced to life in prison for second degree murder in connection with the death of Lubomir, also known as Lubo Kunix, in Vancouver. So, background: Vancouver police responded to the report of a body of a man that was located between 2nd and 3rd Beach on the seawall on February 1st, 2017. The victim was identified as 61-year-old Lubomir Kunik. Mr. Kunik had died at the scene from apparent stab wound. 29-year-old Tyler Anthony Lazmadey was charged with first-degree murder of Kunik on January 9th, 2018. Lazmadey pleaded guilty to the lesser offense of second-degree murder in December 2019, but according to the Vancouver Sun, when the sentencing hearing began in July 2020, he created a scene in court and indicated he wanted to withdraw his plea. He applied to have the court declare him not criminally responsible and said he was suffering from schizophrenia at the time. Two psychiatrists testified in court, and they both came to different conclusions.
BC Supreme Court Justice Laura Grereau accepted that Lazygmede suffered from a mental health disorder at the time, but found it was not likely schizophrenia. Grereau said the only admissible evidence to the motive of the killing came from his confession to an undercover police officer. He had told the undercover police that he had killed Kunick because he was tired of hearing the voices in his head telling him to molest children. He wanted to make an example of the voices, but the voices did not tell him to commit the murder. He told the police that he was not looking for anyone in particular, and the victim could have been anyone, but not a woman or a child. He then told the undercover officers that he grabbed a machete and concealed it in his pants and went to a path in the park to wait for someone. He said he attacked Kunick from behind, and when Kunick fought back, they both fell over the seawall and he stabbed him repeatedly until the victim stopped breathing. Lazygmede lost his bid to have a judge declare him not criminally responsible due to a mental disorder. And on February 18, 2022, he was sentenced to life in prison for second-degree murder in connection with Kunick's death.
Yeah, that's a kind of a strange one in that. So
yeah,
don't really know what to say about that. Although obviously pretty sad for I guess Lubomir Kunick in that. Okay, so another or one more update, I guess, on a previous case. So there's a trial in some 2018 Middlesex Center homicides that started up. So the background is the police responded to reports of a gray pickup truck in a field on November 4th at approximately 10 a.m. in the area of Bodkin Road and Jones Drive in Middlesex County. Police arrived to find three victims deceased in the back of the pickup. The victims were identified as 37-year-old Melissa Trudy Miller, 33-year-old Alan Grant Porter, and 32-year-old Michael Shane Jameson. All three victims were members of the Six Nations of the Grand River. This, of course, in Ontario, not far from Brantford. Miller was 7 months pregnant. Ontario Provincial Police arrested and charged Kirsten Bombury, 36, on February and November 23rd. She was charged with three counts of accessory after the fact to murder. On March 8th, 2019, police charged Nicholas Shipman, 36, with three counts of second-degree murder. Thomas Bombury, 30, with two counts of second-degree murder. And Jamie Beaver, 32, with one count of second-degree murder. And the trial has now started. Thomas Bombury was on trial for second-degree murder for the deaths of Melissa and Alan. Autopsy results showed Melissa died of multiple stab wounds to her chest, blunt force head injuries, and ethanol intoxication. Alan died of multiple sharp force trauma to the neck and chest, and Michael died of a shotgun wound to his chest. The Hamilton Spectator's reporter, Susan Claremont, has been attending the trial. According to Claremont, Justice Andrew Goodman stopped the double murder trial mid-afternoon to inform Kirsten Bombury, Thomas Bombury's cousin. He was detaining her because you've been unresponsible today in the witness stand. She claimed to have no information in the murders, even though in January 2019, she reached out from jail to OPP homicide investigators and then gave a nearly four-hour interview detailing the murders and the removal of the bodies. She admitted on a videotaped statement that she buried the murder weapons and cleaned up the crime scene. She herself was facing three counts of accessory after the fact of murder. She was later found not guilty, her lawyer arguing she helped the killers because she feared for her life. She's now back in court to testify against her cousin Thomas. Judge asked Kirsten, have you used drugs today? Each time Kirsten, 39, said she hadn't, but reports said her speech was slurred and at times she seemed to nod off and said she didn't want to be in court. The judge, who was presiding over the trial with a jury, had enough, and he established that Kirsten was in contempt of court, and she was taken to jail for the night. Goodman only intended to have her locked for one night. However, a routine body scan showed a package lodged in her pelvic area. She refused to remove the package. Staff were concerned if she was transported to the courthouse with the package intact, it could rupture, and she could overdose. So that's where the trial is right now. And yeah, so we'll keep covering, or at least trying to find out the information with this trial as it goes on, and probably have an episode, or rather have an update for in next month's podcast for the February homicides in Canada and that. So yeah, that's kind of a, I don't know, it's obviously, she obviously doesn't want to testify. I guess the one thing now is like she has a videotape statement that she already did in that. It's also interesting, this is like for a murder investigation, like, or a murder trial, doing judge only rather than selecting a jury in that, so.
Yeah, do you think that's, can you ask for that? I don't
know. Yeah, I think you can. Like, you have the, like, you know, I think you have the right to either in that. Normally, I think, I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, I've seen enough statistics in that, or terms at least, like, how trials go. Like, I've from what I've seen, if it's a murder trial, then usually you try to go with a jury, like, I think.
Yeah, so. Usually, I feel like most things you try to go with a jury, because you want someone to believe your story, whether it's true or not.
Yeah, and whereas, like, the judges have seen it all in that, and probably most likely to be fooled in that, so.
But why? Why would you choose that?
I'm not really sure. So I don't know. I guess we'll eventually find out in that. So,
but also, I didn't know you could refuse in jail to remove something that you're concealing.
Yeah, I guess, like, obviously we all know, like, you know, people try to bring in drugs into jail, and you know they often do a body cavity search just for that. I guess they figure, I don't know.
Like, they know it's there, and she's just like, nope.
So
what? Like,
so, yeah, I guess.
Do they determine how many ounces of whatever she has on her person, if that's legal or not? Like, what is it? Is it weed?
I don't know. It's probably, I think if they're worried about the overdose, I assume it must be something more than weed. So, so obviously it's, as a witness, she's obviously, it's problematic in that, so.
Crazy.
It's pretty, like, an unusual trial in that. But obviously, that's the one thing about, you know, homicide in that. Like, you know, usually, it's not usually fine, upstanding citizens that are, like, often involved in that, so, yeah.
But why would you bring drugs in your cavity to the courthouse? Like, that also seems weird, because she wasn't in jail before.
Yeah. No, that's true, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
like, would this just, like, a place to keep them in case you need them, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So that's basically been the January 2022 episode for Homicide Canada, the podcast. I think that's our 20th episode. So congratulations to us on making it to 20. And so we'd also mention that we also have we've kind of expanded internationally. So we actually have a site called homicidenyc.com. If you're interested in homicides in the New York City area. And then for this podcast and what we cover, homicidecanada.com. So yeah, we try to have a post for every homicide in Canada. And then we have pages for keeping track of the stats for the provinces and the major municipalities. I'm just reiterating what we said at the top of the podcast. So our info, or our email is info@homicidecanada.com. So if you want to tell us if we missed a murder in your municipality or province, or there's anything else you want to say, just hit us up. Our Twitter is homicide_Canada. Our DMs are always open. And then if you go on Facebook or Instagram and look at us, Google, or rather search there for Homicide Canada, we should come up. So yeah, that's the end of the episode. Thanks from Tammy and I for listening. Probably be back with a February episode, and also probably another episode as well, maybe covering all of last year, just kind of some of the more statistics. And then, I don't know, probably like in March or April and that, maybe we'll try to do a couple other one-off episodes. So thanks for listening, and until next time.